operator would like to inform all participants this call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time.
Mark Quackenbush.
We'll go quick roll call.
Yes, why don't you go ahead?
Good morning, good evening to everyone. On today's RIA sub-team B call, we have Danny Younger, Michele Nalon, Tatiana Kramtsova, Steve Metalitz, Staten Hammock, Phil Corwin, Mark Trachtenberg. From staff, we have Dave Vitello, Giza, Margie Milam, myself, Giza Gruber-White, and we have apologies from Abri Doria and Cheryl Langdon Orr. If I could just please remind everyone to state their names when speaking. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. This is Steve Metalitz, and I think there were one or two other people beyond your list that are on the Adobe. I see Mike Rodenbaugh, and I don't know if you mentioned Marika, Dave Piscatello. Are those folks on the call?
Yes.
Okay. Well, welcome. Well, we have, a pretty simple agenda today. I think there was an agenda posted on the workspace, but I don't have that in front of me right now. But basically, as you recall, we set a target date or deadline of last Monday, the 9th, for people to send in their lists of possible topics to help us complete our first task of compiling the list of topics of possible amendments to the RAA. And we did get a very good response on that, mostly on the 9th and some in a day or two thereafter. And since then, Margie has pulled together a chart, which she's actually sent out twice. The most recent one was about 2 hours ago. And it lists all of the submissions that were made and organizes them under issues. So, for example, her first issue is prohibition on registrar cyber squatting, and she's got three or four points from the staff proposal that was put in, the staff notes, and three proposals from Danny Younger's list. And there are some RAA references in some cases to for some of these points. So I think obviously none of us have had a chance to go through this in great detail, but it might be worthwhile just to have Margie walk us through this or tell us how she proceeded to do this, and we can give her whatever feedback we can give now and then decide how we're going to use this document, which I think is going to be an excellent starting point for completing our tasks here, or at least moving forward on our tasks. So unless there's other remarks that people want to make at the outset, which, of course, I'm happy for folks to do, maybe we could ask Margie just to walk us through this document. Obviously, we don't have to go through every single proposal in here, but just in general, how she's organized this, and perhaps she could take questions at that point.
Sure, that's fine. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay. Basically what we did is we took the different proposals. We took the staff notes document. We took the law enforcement, the IPC, and Danny Younger's, and Holly Raish's comments that she submitted over the email list, and tried to compile them on specific issues so that you could see in one spot all of the comments that were made with respect to that particular issue. And so we can just go, if this format works for you, we can just go through the various topics and identify, you know, what were the issues raised. And then I guess, Steve, we can pause and see whether anyone has comments on the specific topics, or do you want me just to run through every single one and then open it up for comments?
Well, why don't you run through, if you can run through it quickly, because I think there's something like 28 topics, so I'm not sure we'll be able to have a discussion at this point about each of them, but if you could just quickly run through what's covered under each of the topics, and then we can obviously people may have questions as we go along.
Okay. Michaela had a question, though. Michaela, or did you take put your hand down?
I mean, as long as there's an opportunity for, I think if you go through the entire list and then trying to get meaningful feedback on any of us, we'll probably have forgotten what you said for the first couple of topics by the time you get to the last one.
No, I think people should feel free to jump in when at any point.
Okay.
Yeah, I think otherwise it's going to be, we'll realize she's made wonderful points, but we'll have completely forgotten what the hell they were.
Right.
Okay, so we'll pause after each topic. I'm not going to read everything that's on the document, but at least we'll start talking about the topics in an organized manner. The first one is the prohibition on a registrar cyber squatting, and we had a number of suggestions from both staff and Danny Younger with respect to addressing this topic. They include trying to be more specific on provisions that explicitly prohibit cyber squatting, and then we've actually in the implementation options given several options for doing that, but I won't go into that right now. Danny Younger also indicated that there should be a termination of accreditation for this activity for registrar cyber squatting and penalties for front running. He also suggested that registrars be prohibited from engaging in front running and having penalties and warehousing or speculation in domain names by registrars. So he's made some more detailed suggestions with respect to cyber squatting. Any comments on that before I move on? Michaela?
I think that there's a danger here because the cyber squatting, you need to be very careful how you define it because it's all very well saying that something about, you know, bad faith, but bad faith, one man's bad faith could be another man's accident, and not all UDRP cases would actually hold up in a normal court. And there have been cases where UDRPs have been decided in rather strange circumstances. The other thing is that Danny's comment there, I mean, maybe Danny could clarify what he's referring to. The warehousing of speculation and domain names by registrars, that sounds very broad sweeping. I mean, what about companies that that offer aftermarket services? I mean, is that included there, or are we talking about something completely different? I mean, some clarification would be helpful.
This is Danny. The language is taken specifically from the current RAA in the section that deals with areas that are ripe for future consensus policy development. So it is the current language that in there that is being referenced in my comments.
This is Steve. Let me just say also at this point that obviously any of these topics, there would be a lot of questions about, you know, whether there should be a provision in the RAA about it, and if so, just what it would say. But I think at this stage of our work, we're just trying to identify a list of topics. So obviously questions for clarification are perfectly appropriate, but we're obviously not going to be – we're not even trying to hammer out language or even necessarily all the contours of a particular provision today. So any other comments or questions on issue one on Margie's chart? If not, Margie, why don't you go on to issue two?
Okay, sure. The next category of issues relates to or suggestions relates to malicious conduct. And as staff in the document that we circulated, we had various issues related to malicious conduct that we suggested. For example, we suggested incorporating a provision in the RAA where the registrars would have a duty to investigate and report back on what action they've taken when receipt of credible evidence demonstrating illegal malicious conduct. And we've provided suggestions in that regard on the right-hand side with respect to implementation options. Let me just scroll a little bit through this document. It's hard to read. and in some of the options, we talked about what would be an appropriate response with respect to investigation. For example, an automatic email response would probably be not be enough. We've suggested that this might be appropriate to be dealt with through a registrar code of conduct. And we've also taken a look at some of the suggestions made by the ESAC Recommendation 38 to have complete and accurate contact information for malicious conduct. And so we're trying to make sure that we have a point of contact both for malicious conduct and for contractual compliance purposes. So those are some of the suggestions that we made with respect to malicious conduct. Any questions before I move on?
Yeah, Margie, it's Mike Rodenbaugh.
Go ahead, Mike.
Sure. Does this include the notion of having like a centralized reporting service also so that ICANN would be tracking all of these investigation reports, or would ICANN just audit registrars if there were complaints? How do they envision compliance with number one? It's just what I would wonder.
Mike, this is Dave Giza. We haven't worked through those details at this point, but clearly, you know, auditing would be our first and primary tool in an effort to develop a baseline of compliance around this provision and other provisions that are being suggested here.
Thanks.
Margie, this is Steve. My only comment is that you might want to, we might call this topic malicious conduct, paren duty to respond or something like that. It might be a little clearer what this is covering.
Yeah.
Okay. Michaela has questions?
There's just on point four in the staff note. Registrars provide and maintain complete and accurate contact information for point of contact, yada, yada, yada. I thought we had to do that anyway. Am I missing something?
No,
go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, if it were that clear in the RAA, we would not have raised it as an issue for this group, working group. We just don't believe that clarity exists in the RAA today. Margie, you can jump in on this point, and I think you know, Dave Piscatella might want to weigh in on this as well, because today there really is no point of contact for malicious conduct. There's a point of contact for general administrative matters, but what staff was suggesting here was a specific point of contact that's accountable and responsible to deal with malicious conduct issues when they're raised with registrars.
Oh, fair enough. I don't have an issue with it. I was just wondering why it was there. It was just more a query in terms of, I know this can come up on other things where ICANN staff have indicated that they've had issues contacting certain registrars. So no, that it's just more for clarification than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sure. And just to clarify, there's different functions here. So you may have a contact for the contract, and it's usually maybe a lawyer or someone like that. But the operational side of this, maybe the security department might be a different contact. So we're just being more specific on the kinds of contacts that we think are appropriate, especially to deal with malicious conduct.
No, that's fine.
This is Danny with a quick question. What do we do in the event that we've got what amounts to shell corporations set up by some of these registrars that really don't have staffing that allows for an abuse contact? Would that be handled then by the head of the family?
Danny, it's Dave Giza. That's a fair question. At the moment, I would say the probable answer is yes, but I think this group would have to explore that in greater detail.
Mm-hmm. I think also, it's Mike Rodenbaugh again, the resellers also should be mentioned in here, that should also have a complete and accurate contact information, and also be bound to investigate reports.
I think that may be a good transition to the next topic.
Sure. Okay. So let's move on to the next topic: privacy and proxy services and resellers. And we gave some thought to this on the staff side. One of the areas that we saw that was a gap was a requirement that escrow be required for proxy registration data. And so at the moment, the way the contract reads, you either escrow the proxy data or you describe that you don't escrow the proxy data or the privacy data. And we felt that that was a gap that might be considered for, you know, additional amendments. And we gave some specific language on how to do that. The next area relates to getting more information on privacy and proxy registration services, including points of contact for privacy and proxy service providers and a description of the services made. So what that's meant to address is at the moment we really have anecdotal evidence on what is proxy and privacy services, but we don't have any formal way of knowing what's being made available by the registrars. And so we thought that that was a useful piece of information that could be included in the RIA. The next topic relates to what are the obligations that apply to registry to privacy or proxy services. And essentially, right now, there's no obligation under the contract that if there's an allegation of malicious conduct or cyber squatting that's sent to the privacy or the proxy service, that it actually gets forwarded to the customer. And so one of the suggestions that we've made is consider requiring that there is some sort of forwarding service that relates to specific disputes related to the domain name.
Margie, this is Steve. Could I
sure.
comment briefly? I wouldn't necessarily agree that there isn't an obligation now, but I would certainly agree that it would be helpful if it was clearer. So it's certainly an appropriate topic for an amendment.
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Did someone else want to comment? Okay. I'm looking at the next one. The next one relates to, with respect to privacy or proxy registration services, to provide a point of contact so that we know who at the privacy or proxy service would be responsible for investigating and responding to malicious conduct complaints. So this is the same theme as what we described earlier for the registrars. We also think that it's appropriate to request that from the privacy or proxy registration services. And then our next set of suggestions relates to Section 3773, and this is the language that relates specifically to proxy services. Currently, there's a requirement that if there's language that relates to reasonable evidence of actionable harm, but there's no definition of what that means. And I think that that's been, and David Giza can possibly address this, but I think that's been an area of concern as to how that language is interpreted. And so our suggestion is to come up with contract language that would clarify that, or possibly, if we don't want to go into that much detail, address it through an advisory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Dave speaking. And we're actually working on a draft advisory right now with assistance from the IPC and others. And so as that draft advisory comes together, we'll share that document with the working group. I think it's a good starting point to consider what language, you know, ought to be included in the RAA going forward. But I do want to say that we've made some progress here, and we should have something to share with the group in December.
Okay, then the next point on that relates to, and this is number four, an implementation option. It relates to whether there is
is an obligation to reveal the contact information for the privacy or proxy services, specifically in the instance of malicious conduct. And so that's been a complaint that we've heard of, through the law enforcement sources and others about, you know, needing to get access to that underlying information. So this is just a discussion point on whether that, that would be an appropriate issue to address. The privacy and proxy services also were touched upon in the ICC working group. Steve, do you want to go through these, or I don't know if you're involved.
I'd be glad to do that very quickly. And it's obviously there's a lot of overlap with what Margie just went through. The first point is about requiring the registrars to collect the data on the true registrant or the beneficial owner of the registration or the licensee, the person who's the customer of the proxy service. The second is to eliminate the option for these proxy and privacy services not to escrow the contact data, which is currently provided, I believe, in the agreement. The third is to have an accreditation process for proxy and privacy registration services, and this would certainly be one way of enforcing some of these requirements that Margie talked about, is if services had to basically sign up for them. The fourth one, again, similar to what Margie was talking about, would be to specify when these services need to disclose the actual contact data, what information has to be provided to them in order for that to happen. The next one really deals with, I think, the staff's current interpretation of the 3.7.7.3, which is that, and really dealing with the circumstances in which a proxy service doesn't provide the contact data that is needed, should the registration in the name of the proxy service be canceled in that circumstance? The next one basically makes the registrars responsible when they're offering a proxy or privacy registration service in connection with the registration process. They should be on the hook for violations that might occur by that registration service. The next three, frankly, deal with resellers and not necessarily with proxy and privacy services. And I guess one question I would have to Margie is why you decided in this topic to put these together. Obviously, these next three deal with reseller compliance, requiring the registrars to disclose who the resellers are, requiring the resellers to tell the registrant who the registrar is. These don't necessarily have anything to do with a proxy or privacy service. Obviously, you might have a reseller that's not using a proxy or privacy service. You might have a proxy or privacy service in a situation where there's no reseller involved. So I guess I would suggest that we might want to break out a separate category about resellers. And then the last point, I think, in our group here, was that if a reseller is offering a proxy or privacy registration service, then at the time of registration, then they have to meet whatever the requirements are when registrars are offering that. So I think that briefly walks through the IPC working group suggestions. And again, I guess my thought would be we might want to break out resellers as a separate topic. There obviously is some overlap, but there certainly are some situations where they don't overlap.
Sure, Stephen, I can comment on that. I didn't draft this. I had someone draft it for me, I think that's right. I think a reseller is probably a separate category from privacy or proxy services. And then I guess I can go back to then. There's law enforcement suggestions, and it's the documents that I circulated earlier that was a compilation of thoughts from a number of law enforcement agencies. And they also address the privacy and proxy services Specifically, I think their approach is that they don't feel that the RAA should explicitly condone or encourage the use of proxy or privacy services. And so that was one of their points. And they cite to some of the affirmation of commitments documents, which relate to timely and unrestricted public access to who complete and accurate WHOIS information. But if privacy and proxy registration services are allowed, they want to limit it to a private individual that's using the domain name only for non-commercial purposes. And so that's one of their suggestions. Secondly, if they believe that the privacy or proxy registrations are allowed, that they should only be from accredited ones, and suggest that ICANN adopt an accreditation system for proxy or privacy services, using stringent checks and balances. They also make a suggestion about if the privacy customer, it's a service, the service obviously would have to have authentic information underlying it, and if the registrar is found to be violating the terms of service, that the information would be immediately published. So that is one of their suggestions on dealing with situations where the registrant engages in illegal activity. So I think that's it with respect to – oh, I'm sorry. I'm going on to the next one. Let's see. Danny, you're on the call, right? Did you have a concern here with respect to privacy or proxy service that you might want to address? This is more related to the reseller agreement. I'm looking at your comment for RAA 312.6.
Okay. At the moment, the contract, current contract, simply stipulates that a registrar must notify the reseller that they're aware of they breached the circumstance. And I was thinking that the language itself is not strong enough.
Okay, thank you. There's also additional provisions from the law enforcement perspective related to when a registrar knowingly or through gross negligence permits criminal activity in the registration of domain names. So this I believe, relates to whether there should be an additional termination provision.
I'm not sure that, again, that one belongs in this category necessarily, but I would just flag that.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think I'll reshuffle that and put it in a separate section. And then the law enforcement suggestion is that the resellers be held completely accountable for all provisions of the RAA. And so they're trying to have registrars obligate the resellers to comply and enforce all of the provisions of the RAA, and that the registrar would be held liable for any breach of the RAA if the reseller commits an act that isn't remedied immediately. And there's also a suggestion that resellers and third-party beneficiaries should be all registered resellers and third-party beneficiaries should be listed and reported to ICANN, who shall maintain accurate and updated records. I'm not sure exactly what that relates to, and we can check with the law enforcement folks to see what they meant by that.
Mike Rodenbaugh?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't resellers or registrars already contractually obligated to obligate their resellers to comply with RAA provisions? Isn't that in the latest amendments?
In the latest amendments, and David Giza, maybe you can comment if you disagree, it's specific to certain provisions. So as I understand the 2009 agreement, it has provisions related to resellers, but it's certain of them, not all of them. David?
Yeah, Margie, that's correct. What this would do is actually reach deeper and wider into the relationship that registrars have with resellers. And obviously that's a topic for discussion and debate among this working group as to how far that reach should go. And I think, you know, the ideas that are presented here are all, you know, equally credible in terms of what we ought to consider and then determine what's practical given the nature of those contractual relationships between registrars and resellers.
Thank you. The law enforcement agencies also suggest that resellers be held to the same due diligence requirements that would apply to registrars and registries. So that's also one of their suggestions. The next one is 3.4.1, which Danny, perhaps you want to address related to conspicuous notice.
Sure. This was pretty much a follow-up on the comment made by the U.S. Department of Commerce through NTIA that the conspicuous notice element isn't really appropriate. And I believe you referenced that at the beginning of this particular section.
Okay. And then you also have a suggestion related to contact data for resellers.
Right, and that's along the lines of what David was pointing out earlier with respect to reach. I'm of the view that should know who all the entities in its process are.
Okay, so before we move on to the next topic, do you want to pause and ask if there's any questions on the issue of privacy, proxy services, and reseller suggestions? Yeah. Okay, well then I guess I'll move on to the next category, and some of this is already touched upon by law enforcement.
Actually, let me just throw in a quick question, if I may. Law enforcement brought up the suggestion, recommendation to look at an accreditation process. Is staff currently looking at the current registrar accreditation process in terms of any internal revisions that were originally recommended by Paul Toomey after the RegisterFly event?
David, I think you can probably address that.
Yeah, great question, Danny. I believe that the registrar liaison team is, continuously reviewing the accreditation process, particularly, you know, now that the new GTLD program, is gaining momentum. And so I don't know specifically what work Tim Cole and his team is doing, but I do know that they look at that process continuously. And, you know, this might be a good place just to footnote that in the document. And then, I could have a discussion with Tim and his team and then just report back to the working group.
Right. I mean, I think it's fair enough to say that if we are going to begin a process of accrediting a new set of entities, we want to make sure that we can take some guidance from whatever errors may have transpired in the prior accreditation process that could probably be fixed going forward.
Okay, thank you for that. I'll move on now to the next section, which is the additional information on registrars and affiliates. And staff made a recommendation or suggestion on seeking additional information regarding registrars and their affiliates and resellers to facilitate the identification of any actors that might be actively complicit in allowing malicious conduct to occur. We're trying to seek out additional information related to registrars, affiliates, and resellers, and have made some suggestions on how to do that. The idea being that one of the things you could consider is that if I can receive information that a registrar, its affiliates, or resellers are engaged in illegal or malicious conduct, that the registrar would cooperate with ICANN in its investigation. And so it's just meant to deal with some possibilities of perhaps registrars being accredited that, you know, are really actively engaged in malicious conduct.
Oh.
Marty, it's Mike Roden, but I got a couple questions.
Sure.
Number one, you say significant resellers suggest maybe, you know, 50,000 or 5%. But what's the logic there? Why not all resellers? And then, go ahead.
Sure. With respect to that point, and I don't know which registrars are on the call right now, but some registrars have thousands and thousands of resellers. It's not it's not a small number of resellers that exist in the marketplace. And we were just trying to be practical, I think. I mean, and maybe David Giza can address this, but we're really trying to get at the, substantive ones because of the size of the potential population. But that's certainly something that, could be discussed.
Margie, this is Dave, and I do agree with that point. We did believe that we need to start somewhere, and we thought that this was a logical starting point based on the existing reseller families that ICANN accredits. So I think, again, if the working group decides that more needs to be done in this regard, Mike, then, the working group ought to, bring your suggestion to the table and see if it's doable, given the, the way in which the resellers, the way in which registrars have established different reseller business models.
Sure. Have you done any research into, what percent of abuse happens among, resellers below that threshold and that sort of thing? That would be useful just to know what the impact of this would be, maybe going to the APWG and other folks.
It's a good suggestion. I'm not aware of any research on this point. Margie, are you?
No, I'm not either.
All right, and then the only other comment I had is maybe number two also just needs to be sure that it has teeth, that it, breach of that provision is a material breach of the contract subject to all the penalties. I hope maybe that's obvious, but still love to see it stated.
Sure, we were trying not to be specific on language because I think the goal of this group is to come up with topics. We were trying to give a background as to what what we mean by some of these issues, as opposed to being very specific. That's certainly something to consider. The other point relates to what we mentioned earlier: a point of contact for malicious conduct, as recommended by the SAC 38 document. The next series comes from the IPC, so Steve, maybe you want to just walk through those.
Yeah, again, there's some overlap with what Margie just went through, and all of these are requirements for the registrars to provide more information than the RAA currently requires, although I'm sure in many cases registrars already do this, but they're not. Apparently it's an issue about whether they're required to do it. So one is to provide ICANN with the current standard registration agreement. That's, I would think, pretty much essential for ICANN to make sure that a registrar is living up to RAA provisions that require certain things to be in the registration agreement with registrants, but it's not at this point required for the registrar to make that available. Second point has to do with basically contact information, and in particular this is very important in the UDRP context, among others, because the location of the registrar can be significant there.
There we go. Hey, sorry about that. Go ahead.
In terms of the UDRP. Are we getting some crosstalk here? Third is for the registrar to basically tell ICANN about their status as an organized business and what jurisdiction they are organized in. The fourth is to give information about their CEO and other principal officers. Again, there are requirements in the in the accreditation process, and there are requirements in the proposed disqualification procedure, though I don't know quite where that stands, as to certain things, if the CEO or principal officers are engaged in some kind of illegal activity, that can reflect on the registrar status under the RAA, and yet the registrars aren't apparently required to specify all these people and to keep it current. And then just to identify who are the affiliates of the registrar, so that we've already heard several references to registrar families. This would require that information to be disclosed to ICANN. So that's the gist of those proposals.
Yeah, and there's a lot of crossover between that and the next set of suggestions from law enforcement.
Right.
The law enforcement approach is to really have accredited registrars submit, you know, accurate and verifiable contact data, including their operational physical location, their address, phone number, and to have that be publicly disclosed in an ICANN web directory. They also think it should be clearly stated on the registrar's main website with PO boxes, incorporation addresses, and mail drops not being acceptable. And finally, one of the suggestions they make is that the registrar should submit their URL and location of the port 43 WHOIS server. Their next suggestions relate to naming the CEO, president, and responsible officers. If a registrar owns multiple accreditations through affiliates, that also be disclosed and publicly displayed on their website. And then similar to the IPC suggestions, that the registrar should be a legal entity within the country of operation and should provide ICANN with official certification of its license or its registration.
Excuse me, one question, Margie. Michaela here. The country of operation, what do they mean by that? I mean, this has been referenced a couple of times. Do you mean the main country where the registrar is based, or what exactly?
I don't know what they mean specifically. I think what we can do is, if we have questions related to their proposal, we can forward it on to them and have them respond, because I think you could read it both ways. You could read it their main office of operation, or all. It could also be all the countries where they operate. I just don't know what they intended by this. And then the next set of suggestions relate to notifying ICANN upon certain changes in their website, such as and their operations, change in their location, the presiding officer, a bankruptcy filing, criminal convictions, and legal actions. So that's one of the suggestions that they made, and they suggest that ICANN should require all registrars, registries, proxy services, resellers, and third-party beneficiaries of any contracts to publicly display ownership information. So that's, again, going at trying to identify ownership and affiliated associations. Then the next set of suggestions come from Danny. I don't know if you want to describe them, Danny.
Sure.
Related.
First recommendation goes to the issue of the existence of shell corporations. I tend to be of the view that ICANN went down the wrong fork in the road when they allowed registrars to create these shell corporations, and I'd like to see that practice eliminated. Second comment is simply reinforcing what law enforcement and others have pointed to, which is to make sure that the officers, directors, their names are known to the public.
Thank you, Danny. So before I move on to Section 5, who is accuracy, do we have questions on the topic of registrar information?
Margie, this is Steve. Let me just ask, at this point we've got about 12 minutes left, and we've gone through four of the 28 topics. So we're obviously not going to get through this chart today. I guess we have two options. One is to continue this walkthrough and then kind of pick it up again at the next meeting. I'm not quite sure when that would be. The other would be if people have had a chance to look through this, and if they have questions, having jumped ahead on any topic that hasn't been reached yet, maybe we would open the floor to those. So let me ask people whether they'd rather just continue as we're going here, or do we want to open up for questions on anything else in the document? Well, let me put it this way. Just, do people have any questions they want to bring up now about anything in topics 5 through 28?
Steve, this is Staten Hammack at Network Solutions. I just have a question. Do you have an idea of how we can weed some of these proposals out, I guess? Or, I mean, what's the next step after going through the proposals and clarifying all of them? I mean, how do we get to, you know, the discussion about the merits of one, or even work on, you know, specific language in some of the cases?
Well,
I'm just trying to get
an
overarching idea of how this process works. And forgive me, I'm kind of new to the working group, so I just want to, you know, sort of get a perspective of how this is going to work.
Well, let me give my response, and then, of course, others may want to chime in. I don't think actually either of those things is in our mandate to work on language or to really get far into the merits of these. We're supposed to be compiling a list. We're supposed to be seeing if any of those items on a list of topics, which is, as I see it, kind of the left-hand column of Margie's chart here is really the list of topics. Then we are supposed to flag any that we think present issues with regard to consensus policies. And then we're supposed to recommend the next steps. You know, what should be the way forward here procedurally? And that's kind of what's supposed to be in our draft report. So I don't see us getting very far into the merits here. If we see something that really isn't about an amendment to the RAA, but is about something else, then that might fall out. But I don't think it's our job to say we like this amendment, we don't like this amendment. As long as we have a pretty clear picture of what the topic is and where it might fit into, how it might fit into the RAA, then I think that kind of is our job. But I think Michele has his hand up.
I do.
Is that on this topic?
It's on the same kind of thing. There's at least one reference in this document, and apologies, I can't remember which section it's in, which is to do with post-expiry of domains. I think there was some, it might have been Danny.
That was mine.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that some of that is already being discussed in another working group with regards to the post-expiry domain name recovery. And some of it also comes in a small bit into the IRTP working group. So, I mean, I suppose the main thing is, you know, we shouldn't be doubling things up and kind of duplicating work. So, I mean, from Danny's perspective on that, would be very useful for that working group as well. But it's just more of a kind of, you know, there's not much point in letting something involving post-expiry go forward unless you at least note the fact that it's already being discussed in a separate working group. And the other thing was in relation to some of the stuff from law enforcement, without further explanation of some of these proposals, some of them are potentially massive. I mean, the one about registrars being expected to update their websites and inform ICANN of all legal/civil actions, I mean, that in its current form is completely unworkable. I mean, that means if somebody breaks their ankle by walking out of the front door of my office, I should inform ICANN because they're taking a court case against me as a civil action because they broke their ankle in my office. I honestly don't see how that could possibly have any impact on the RAA. I think that's completely out of scope.
Okay, other questions or comments at this point? Okay, so Staten, I hope that answered that question. I guess the question now
Kaylee's last comment was kind of my question. Like, how do we how do we get to the point where we say this is not in the scope, you know, or this is?
Well, I wouldn't agree with Michaela that that's not in the scope. It may not be a very smart thing to have in there. There are probably a lot of things in here that we don't necessarily want to see in the RAA, but the question of whether that's something that could go in the RAA as a condition for accreditation or for compliance, I'm not sure that it's our job to say that's outside the scope. Again, I think we're talking about the left-hand, if you look at the list of topics on the left-hand side, and obviously that will need to be refined, and we've already had some suggestions for doing that. I think that's our main focus at this point, and note we need to make it clear that if we present this list in a draft report, we're not saying that everybody in the drafting team thinks that there should be amendments on this topic in the RAA or that they support any particular amendment that's been proposed, but just that it's a topic for consideration.
Well, Steve, I mean, if we could get some clarification from law enforcement about some of the things that they put there, because without having a clarification on some of these topics, it's not clear what they're trying to do. Because I can understand from my dealings with law enforcement and from dealings with, you know, general issues and what have you, that the spirit of what they might be trying to achieve is one thing, and maybe it's just that they've presented it in such a manner that it's coming across as something completely different. The thing is, if they're talking, say, I have a serious issue with this legal civil actions thing even being considered, but that's, I go on the record as saying such, and I'm sure that staff and other people wouldn't disagree with me about that.
Okay, but I think, yeah, you raise a good, that's a fair point, that we have people here, you know, Danny's here, and I'm here, and Margie's here, and so we can try to answer some questions, but there's no one from law enforcement here. So maybe we should either try to get someone from law enforcement onto our next call, and we can certainly reach out to them and try to set that up. There may be difficulties with doing that because, you know, that was an international group, and I don't know whether, you know, for example, the FBI can speak for the Australian or UK law enforcement on any of these points. But if we can get that set up, that would be good, and if we can't, then we can try some other process for getting answers to questions that people have about their proposals, just explanations of what they meant.
Exactly. As I said, I pinged Margie about this off list because it was just reading through the document. I could see a lot of the stuff that they were talking about. Okay, some of the proposals I would view personally as being a little extreme, but I could understand where they were coming from. But a couple of them just struck me as very, very strange, and understanding some of the motivation behind where those came from probably go a long way to understanding what they're trying to achieve. Because, I mean, ultimately, from my own perspective, I've no problem with working with law enforcement, making things better for everybody involved, but it's just understanding what they're actually trying to achieve with a suggestion rather than the suggestion itself might make that a little bit more feasible for everybody.
Okay.
Sure, this is Margie. I can follow up. I received that document from Bobby Flame, and I can just find out. I know that he had some hesitancy in joining our group, but that's different than answering specific questions or, you know, maybe coming on for one of our calls to provide some background. So I'll follow up with them.
Okay. And I think that would be useful. And then I guess the other thing I would suggest is that people, you know, take a look at this document and on the list, either if there are questions about what a particular proposal means or if there are suggestions about how it's organized or could be reorganized. And we've had one or two of those already, and I think there are probably a few more I know there's a few more that I would raise. Let's try to do as much of that as possible on the list, and then there's always a possibility of another iteration of this document with it's been reorganized or presented in a slightly different way. I think we should aim to, if we can, to try to get someone from law enforcement as a guest on our next call.
Steve, a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
It may be appropriate at this point to extend the deadline for topics formally for another week. I'd sure love to get some topics through from the NCUC representatives. Perhaps you could reach out to the folks in the ISP community that don't seem to be participating on this team at the moment. I don't think it would kill us to allow a little bit more time to see whether we've missed any topics that perhaps should go onto this list.
I'm fine with that. I think we've got a lot of them, you know, there's a lot of them here, and, you know, but there could be some non-duplicative suggestions that would come from other sources, so I have no problem.
True, and you have had folks in civil society busy in the IGF during the course of this week, so simply throwing it out there for another week is probably a reasonable idea.
Well, I have no problem with that. And I'd encourage you to reach out to your contacts and tell them, you know, we could certainly try to incorporate any further suggestions that they have.
Fair enough.
So my clock says it's 2 minutes before the hour, so I think we should be wrapping this up. Are there any other questions or points that people want to raise on this call? If not, I want to thank Margie in particular and her team for pulling this together. This was obviously a lot of work, and I think it gives us a great launch pad for our next step. We will try, Margie, if you and I can talk about trying to get a law enforcement guest, and then, you know, hopefully if we get their schedules, then we can put up a doodle for the next call at a time when they can participate, because I think if there are questions about what they've put forward, there should be some way to try to clarify those. And so I would encourage people to look for a doodle in the near future, hopefully in the next few days, for our next meeting.
I'm an apology. I'm an hour late because it said Sydney 6 o'clock plus 1 hour. So it's 7 o'clock and instead of 6 o'clock.
Oh, well.
He's lost today.
Could I suggest that the next time just be in universal time, and then I can figure it out and get it right?
Okay.
Yeah, I thought that the notice was out in UTC, but if not...
No, it was listed Sydney is 6 o'clock plus an hour because we're on daylight saving, but basically I think somebody did the wrong calculation. So has somebody done notes for this?
I see there have been some notes taken by somebody during this call.
That's right.
And there will be an MP3 recording of the...
Ah, oh, terrific. No, okay. I just don't look. My apologies. I actually was awake at 6 and would happily have joined the call.
Well, it's. I think it's our fault if we got the wrong information out to you. So I'm sorry about that. And
that's all right.
We'll try to make sure that the UTC time is listed in any future notice.
Yeah. No, that would be really, really helpful. And my apologies. Because I was really looking forward to participating. But never mind. I'll just catch up and join the next call, I think.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Great. Anything else that people want to bring up? If not, thanks everybody, and we'll look for a doodle in the near future on our next meeting.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye now.